Welcome back to Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan here with Jeremy and our good friend Will.
How you doing, man? What's up, motherfuckers?
What's up?
I haven't seen you in a while since before, like, today, so that's fucking, how you been?
Good, doing good, living life, trying to stay under the radar. Got some different things going on, but mostly just work keeps me busy, but, living that small town life, I guess.
Dude, you're right. No headphones is weird.
It's weird, right? I gotta have them on.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah, that's cool. You still work at Besser, right?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. Still making machine parts for the masses.
So,
how long have we known each other? I don't know.
Oh, let's see. Probably 15.
That's what I was thinking.
Something like that. Going back to the Red Wings second batch of championships.
That's funny that that's how you date that.
Well, yeah, and I'm trying to, I know it's like.
Yeah, I do that a lot, especially with Detroit sports. Yeah. Definitely moments where.
I think I've only known you for like 4 or 5 years.
19 years I've known you because I met you before I could drink in Grand Rapids.
Really?
Yeah.
In Grand Rapids? In the alley?
No, at a fucking Eric Tank's birthday party, maybe.
Oh, my God. That is weird. I don't even remember that.
But that's just where I met you. Was just like a,
okay. That's probably sounds right.
I was like the fucking munch, you know, the fucking high school brat running around in that motherfucker.
Wow. That's,
what'd you that say is it was true. At? Is that a birthday party?
Yeah, in Grand Rapids at this dude Eric Tanks and fucking Dumpy.
Oh, that
Dumpy
place?
Lived there and he had a fucking like a Harley all torn apart.
Oh, that might have been Hoffman and Dumpy and Dave's house, which we lived more like on Heritage Hill.
I don't even know, remember how the fuck I got there.
That's
honestly
a trip, dude. We used to have, we had a citywide party called Sink or Swim, and we flyered this party citywide. We didn't know any, really that many people. There was a large contingent of our people from our hometown that lived down there, but we had this huge house and we were struggling making rent, so we flyered a city party and 500 to 600 people showed up. Random people.
It's so crazy.
We knew the brewmaster from Founders before they got big, and we got kegs for like $40 and we charged $5 a head, and the entire city showed up.
Yeah, that's
it.
Fucking
might have been that one.
No, there wasn't that many people. Okay. there okay. It was like a regular house party.
Okay, just like the crew. Like,
I was like 20, so you would have been like 25, 24.
Yeah, I probably would have just moved there. Wow.
And then when you came back, that's when you moved back, that's what I might, I don't know. That would have been how much longer after that?
From Grand Rapids, I don't even remember how I landed back here. It wasn't for very long.
Yeah, and then you bounced.
Then I bounced to Florida. Yeah. I don't know. I've been all over, man.
Phil's been all over.
I just met you at Phil's house.
Yeah, I remember that night, too, because I was back in town from Traverse City, my last residence out of my hometown. And, yeah, you would come over or whatever, and I met you, and you were a cool cat. And I think we had
I was living schooling. Downstairs at the time, I think, still.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, I remember seeing you in college for a while because you were in, like, the welding class and I was in a machining class.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so that was cool. So that was a while. So I graduated, whatever, and I went to work at Besser, which Besser is a company that makes machines that make concrete blocks that build buildings all over the world. So
yeah, apparently that's what we're famous for.
It is.
If people know anything about Alpina.
Concrete and shipwrecks.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Shipwrecks too.
Like world renowned, dude. We got fucking more shipwrecks than anywhere in the world.
Well, we do have the biggest bodies of open water, so I mean it would make sense.
Or no, we don't.
Open fresh water.
Yeah.
Safe harbor for pirates. Well, actually, kind of an odd reference, skipping ahead a little bit, but our first song in our last band was about shipwrecks off the coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird kind of.
That's why I was side note. When we were talking earlier, I was like, I don't have any audio of that.
I can't remember the name of the song either, but it was the first one.
So let's rewind.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your musical influences, Bill. Because this is, for those who don't know, I guess he's one of the first guys to sing for a hardcore band in Alpena.
Yeah, that's what I've always heard, is like you were like one of the guys that brought it. So it'd been like
you, Kyle, Nate, and Josh would be like the first guys to bring hardcore around here. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say we were the first modern hardcore band, like a Victory Records style hardcore band. Before that, there was a band. It was called Youth Conspiracy, and I wasn't in that band, but that was Black Flag covers, Minor Threat covers, and that's kind of really what turned me onto the scene. Like, before that, I was probably, I don't even know what I was into. Definitely not hardcore. But after that show, and it was at...
Rod Stewart.
Yeah, Rod Stewart. Yeah. I mean, impression-wise...
That's weird, Todd. Keep going.
He wasn't there that night, but he may come up later.
Yeah, I know.
That was at the theater, which burnt. And it was a battle of the bands. And we had a lot of bands back then, a lot of punk bands. There was a ska band, Spike Punch, or no, actually, Spike Punch wasn't around yet. Mike was in some band, I can't remember what it was called, something Fall. One Fall. And they won that.
Where
that
did contest. Battle of the Bands take place, like in Alpena?
Right across from JJ's, that theater.
The one that just burned down?
Yeah, the one that just burned down.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know
hopefully that stage is still there, because there were some great shows there, and we did end up playing one show there about a year later. That was really cool. But I digress. I suppose that's kind of where things started, was that battle of the bands. And then being a small town, like, we had a wealth of musical talent in this town, going all the way back to the 70s. A lot of different bands coming up here. And for me personally, like, we used to have these shows out in the country at this Wilson Township Hall. It was a little nothing hall out in the middle of nowhere, across from a cemetery. And when I was in junior high, maybe late grade school, there was a lot of shows that would go on out there. Crack Abraham, Kane, Hieronymus Bosch, Dig Dug. A lot of, like, punk bands, but definitely had their own flavor. I mean, being small town, they were definitely unique. So that's kind of where it started for me. This is the first show I'd ever been to, was right here locally. And I think that kind of influences probably like our mindset, because we already had a scene in a way, an established music scene. So it wasn't like we were blazing a trail or anything. It was already there. We just augmented.
You set the groundwork for me getting into it. So, and the same thing is, my first show was here in Alpena. So it is strange to think that, you know, there was, fuck, I don't know, 75, 80 people at that show. And then once you go to, like, let's say Detroit at that time, or Flint, Saginaw, fuck, a lot more people, man, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that was kind of like always our target, was to, well, I guess I'll go back a little bit more. Before the band started, you know, that was like the beginnings of it. But once we got into high school and we started kind of expanding our musical horizons with different people coming together, because, like, I grew up in like a Catholic school for 8 years. We were pretty isolated. But the thing is, like, in a way, we were kind of more rambunctious, I think, than the normal public school kids, because we had a little bit more confinements. So
you
we
went
probably,
to St. Anne's?
Yep. St. Anne's represent. A lot of people, good people come through there. And I was actually in that school because of some issues I had as a kid in public schools. I had some violent tendencies, and I was thrown out of a lot of schools.
Shit,
and,
everybody at this table has been thrown out of our local high school, which is pretty funny.
Yep, me too. Yep. And I was actually cool. I was straight edge in high school, so. But I didn't really care. I was in a band. I was like, whatever. I don't need school. Well, now I'm 44 years old. kind of wish I would have stayed in school.
That's always like the case. I try to tell my kid that all the time. Eventually you'll regret it.
Right.
So what was your first band?
First band, well, if Nick's listening, it was, well, I'm not even going to bring that up. It was like a Pearl Jam. I'm not going to bring up the name because the name sucks.
Come on, dude.
But the band was, we were 12 or 11 or 12. I don't know. We were in fifth grade.
That's fucking awesome. What was the name, dude? You can it can be so stupid, doesn't so you, mate? Lame, dude. Come on, dude. You are, you know it. You gotta say it.
All right. Oh my god, this is gonna be the only thing that's remembered out of this whole podcast. Nick knows it. It's called Porcelain Flowers. I think we ended up on
it. That's not quite as dumb as I thought it was gonna be.
Yeah.
Oh man, that
I've heard dumber, but it feels a little soft. Is all. So, but it is porcelain, so.
Immediately comes to mind, which is funny, fucking Batman, dude.
The Maybe Joker. That's where we got it from.
There's porcelain fucking flowers in that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And we always talk about Batman on here. You see that?
That might have been a subconscious influence on me.
So that's not that bad. Yeah, I thought it was going to be like something like fucking, like, I fucking know, like Will and the fucking
shit eaters.
Sheep. Herders or something. I don't fucking know, dude.
Heavy pet. Will's heavy petting.
Yeah, fucking Hootie and the fucking idiots.
That was later on in life. We come up with that one. But at that time, yeah. So that was the first band. It was like a Pearl Jam fucking grunge influence band. We were maybe in junior high. I think we were in sixth grade. Probably still in elementary school.
Fair anyway, to say like MTV was a pretty big influence on you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, I guess over the years, being a child of the 80s and the 90s, a true Gen Xer, I've kind of had a little bit of a taste of everything, I suppose, from the 80s to the 90s.
I hear you.
But after 2000, most things became very uninteresting. I'd say 92 was the most magical year ever. If you look at all the releases, everything, Dr. Dre's The Chronic, I mean, you had everything coming out in 92. All the movies, all the music. So it was like probably peak of civilization.
Pretty sure Redman's first album was
92. The peak of civilization.
Yep, and it's all been downhill.
Pete Rock and CL Smooth.
92, motherfuckers.
92. So anyway, so we went on. We ended up in high school. So freshman year, I was kind of a loner. But referring back to this band, Youth Conspiracy, I started getting the gears turning for Minor Threat, Black Flag, stuff like that. They were covering those bands, never heard of them before, and I was taken. So I got into Henry Rollins' book publishing company. I think it's called 21361, if I remember right. I don't know if it's still around. But I started getting into Rollins' band and a lot of his writings and stuff, and I started slapping these stickers on the back of my hatchback 1985 Ford. And people started noticing me in these bands. They were like, well, who's this guy, blah, blah, blah. My connection, Nick, we went to grade school together, so he let them know who I was. Fast forward, I was offered to sing in a hardcore band. And didn't really know about hardcore necessarily, other than Black Flag, Minor Threat, and I was down for that. That sounded perfect. But as time went on, and I got to know my friends a little bit more, I realized it's more metal than it is punk. And it was more the Victory record years.
Have a lot of that integrity influence, man. A
lot of integrity, yep. But, a lot of Earth Crisis, Bloodlet, all that good stuff.
I listened to that earlier today because I knew you were coming in here. And it's funny, dude, because of what's being played now and what the kids are digging as far as a lot of hardcore bands, is that shit would almost stand up now. Because everything's stealing from that era, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Or borrowing, biting, however, you know, doing different things with it. But yeah, it's cool, man, to fucking listen to that shit. And it's like, you know, from Alpina. Like, we actually had some cool shit going on here at one time.
You're talking about Ingrain, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was just making sure I'm on the same page.
Yeah,
yeah. I've had a couple different band iterations over the year. I'd say Ingrain was probably the most personal and influential certainly for this scene. I mean, we kind of laid the groundwork for a lot of things to come, but like I said earlier, we had groundwork. I mean, we didn't blaze any trails except for hardcore, you know what I mean? That was all. And but so people dug us because we were heavy, very heavy. There weren't a lot of heavy bands back then. There was God Pit, and they would play shows together, but we were straight edge, we were vegan. I mean, we had some entrance fees to get close to our circle or whatever, but
that's what your lyrical content basically stemmed from then?
Yeah, a lot of it was straight edge, and it was political, and there was some personal stuff in there, but for the most part, you know, we were riding that wave right after Gamora season ends come out. Like, we were kind of in the middle of that. And then that was our hometown. We got the band kind of going, and then we started going to shows in Detroit, and that changed everything. That was where we got introduced to Earth Mover. That whole scene down there, it blew our minds. We were itching to get down there, and we finally got a ride. I don't know, we were 15, 16. So we loaded up, and we drove down there, and it was at a club called the Mosquito Club, I believe. It was next to Pharaoh's, and it was Earth Mover, One King Down, and Brother's Keeper.
Oh, mother.
So that was truly...
You can't kill me. Oh, love that beginning. Shit, dude.
Yep. That was the beginning, because I had no clue what I was getting into. But when we were sitting in the parking lot, the entire parking lot is full of these hardcore kids from Detroit. And we're, you know, from a small town up north. And we're putting our little bandanas on and, like, whatever. We don't even know what we're getting ready for.
Shout out to Rob from One King Down.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Dude's
totally
got
love to have you on. I know you're watching.
Yes, get a hold of these guys. You got the best verticals I've ever seen on stage in my life.
You are a beast, sir.
So, I mean, Earth Mover absolutely blew me away when they got on. The aggression and just the pure intention of their drive of their music and their vocal style. I mean, it blew me away. It absolutely blew me away. This wasn't Black Flag. This wasn't Minor Threat. This was something a little bit angrier.
Did you guys mosh hard at that time, or did you pick that up from going down there?
No, we didn't dance too much, just because, you know, being small town kids from up north, like, we had a little bit of hesitancy to get in a pit with all these Detroit motherfuckers. I mean, like,
I'm saying though, like, up here, because
up here
I have footage, and what's funny is how one tape in particular is like, band plays a song and, like, everybody knows that breakdown's coming, and you can tell.
Right.
Everybody dances, breakdown's over, everybody stops.
Right.
So it's, you know, and I mean, that's, like, not apparently an Alpena thing, because there was people from Detroit in these videos doing the same shit. So I was like, man, that's fucking crazy weird. Because now, man, I guess not now. People seem to open up and stand around, but a little later on, everybody's fucking moving around, going ape shit crazy, you know?
Right. And I suppose, like, being in our hometown here, you know, we were way more relaxed to kind of cut loose
and throw
some windmills and whatnot. But, like, also, we were in VFW halls. So we weren't in, like, a proper venue or anything. So there was no oversight. There was nobody there except us.
Now, who was putting the shows on back then?
Well,
would you guys have to, like, call around to the hall and, like, say, yo, we're doing, putting on a show, or it's my birthday or whatever? And
pretty much.
Telephone, old school, no internet.
Yeah, no.
Fuck, man, that shit's just so crazy to think about now. Like, as far as, yo, like, booking a band and then hoping that they're going to show up. And
right.
You can't just, like, call them, oh, yeah, we're on fucking 23, man.
Right.
We'll be there in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was different to get bands here. Absolutely, to get bands over here. I think Nate Stickney was probably the main getter of bands. I'm sure Nick was influential on all
that. Shout out to Nate. We love you, dude.
Hell yeah. Representing Florida.
Bring me a Ducati.
Right. Send one up north.
Yeah. Three of them.
But yeah, we would set up different shows, and to get bands here was a little tricky. We had a couple bands that were a little bit weird, a little bit different, but they came, they showed up, so whatever, you know, we were going to do our thing regardless. But yeah, that first show was a pretty big deal. I remember leaving there just kind of like in a daze. I didn't know what I just witnessed. It was too intense. And kind of another cool little side note to that show, it was Spit's last show in Flint. So I believe the drummer of Earth Mover was drumming for them, if I remember right. And they had to book ass out of that show to get to Flint to play that last show for Spit.
Dude, I think... Dude, I want to say I've heard that story before.
Yeah, it was kind of a trip. So we were left with One King Down and Brother's Keeper. Which
did they have to go up to play with Pitbull or something?
I don't remember. Maybe.
So...
Yeah.
One King Down, Brother's Keeper.
Yep. Of course, as you mentioned, Rob, he took over. Absolutely blew me away. And I was a little more familiar with One King Down. I think we already had their release before that. So we were familiar lyrically.
Bloodlust Revenge.
Yep, Bloodlust Revenge. I think we knew where all the breakdowns were going to show up. So we were ready. But we didn't dance. I mean, we were 16. Like, we were a little nervous, maybe.
Oh, shit, dude. I remember being a youngin' down there and getting fucking hit and just, like, gritting my teeth and, like, showing no emotion or anything. Just going, oh, my God, this fucking sucks. Oh, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the worst I got. It was at Detroit Fest, and Morning Again headlined it. And it was a huge, like, multi-day festival, and... This one band in Detroit, I'll probably pronounce their name wrong. It's either Trifine or Treffine. Three singers, Scotty Backflip, Dave Hayes, all them guys. And like,
I remember talk to somebody else about that. Yeah. And they were trying to pronounce the name.
It's Trifine. And
okay, we always said it
who
wrong.
Who were we talking to about?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Because on a side note on that, Ryan Tolan, a friend of ours, he made a T-shirt.
Oh right.
Because they never had, like, t-shirts, apparently.
Yeah,
it might have been had one. Dan from Coalition.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. Well, that story, so we'd been wanting to see them for a while. Yeah, and that was the main reason we went to that festival. Earthmover played a year before. Anyway, we went to see them, and I was right in the middle of the pit. As soon as they opened up, the very first note that dropped, I think I was punched in the balls, kicked in the face. I hit the ground, and immediately I was helped up and, like, literally thrown to the side of the pit. And that was enough for me. And so for the rest of the night, I kind of watched them from the edge of the pit. But that was probably the brutalest pit other than, like, Fury of Five and Earth Crisis in Buffalo. That was a little rough. But I wasn't much of a mosher too much. I was for bands that I knew the members in the band. It was different.
Like when you're showing love and shit, you know.
Yep.
For sure. And like, you don't want to fucking be moshing it up and look like a fucking idiot when the breakdown's over and you're still out there floor punching, right?
That happened more than once.
I'm sure it happens every time.
The audio would drop and we'd be out there all floor punching in slow motion. Yeah. Like,
it's like that guy that holds a clap for too long.
Exactly.
That was us. That was us collectively, but thankfully that rarely happened.
So how far did Ingrain go then?
Let's see.
You guys put out a demo.
Yep, demo.
Did you only play around Alpena? Did you play anywhere else?
We played Pharaohs once, and I think that was it for Ingrain. The Pharaohs show...
That's fucking sick.
I think we were supposed to play with... Or we did play with Harvest, and For the Love Of.
Damn. You played, like, with fucking Harvest, dude. Yeah. That's pretty cool to say.
They influenced our music very heavily after we did everything Harvest after that.
That is very apparent
in
the next band, actually.
Yep. Our full release, you can hear the Harvest in there big time.
Which is fucking not a bad thing. Anybody out there, they just released Transitions on vinyl for the first time like a month ago, maybe.
Yeah, that was a pivotal album, no doubt.
So sick.
Yep, I still have that on CD.
Do you?
That's a trip, yeah.
Yeah, that's that fucking dope.
Yeah, so I don't remember them playing, but I remember they were super dope. And I think I was doing merch or something. And this band, For the Love Of, they set up and had, like, candles and a big gong. And, like, they hit this gong, and, like, all the lights went down, and the candles were up. Sick. And we're like, what the fuck is going on? And they were one of the sickest fucking bands I've ever seen. And their release, and this is super rare, I don't know if these guys are still around hearing this, but they had the best movie samples ever.
In, like, Harvest?
No, For the Love Of.
Oh, For the Love
Of. Yeah, dude. YouTube them guys and check their samples. They're dope. They're really cool.
I am unfamiliar with that band.
Yeah,
they're different. They're kind of, I don't want to categorize them, but like Chaos Core, Converge, kind
of
like that.
For the Love Of?
Yep. You're probably going to get the fucking phone book when you look that up, but.
No, that's okay. I'm just doing it so I don't forget later.
Yeah, yeah, word. So that was the only show we actually played down there.
So after Ingrain, then, what did you do? Because the only band that I've ever actually heard of yours was Ingrain. I have there's a shitty laptop in a drawer right there.
Right.
I have like an MP3 thing that I got off of, I don't even remember how or where I got it, to be honest. Pat, maybe.
Okay.
And it's on that computer. That computer no longer works, but the reason I've been keeping it is because I have a bunch of random shit on there that I need to get off the hard drive before I toss it, and that's on there.
Nice.
But I know of Wild Will and the Four Plays.
Yeah.
I only know it by name, though. I've never heard it. And outside of those
two... You never
two,
will, sir.
Yeah.
That was a blip.
No, that shit was fun.
Wasn't it just one show or something?
No, we played a couple shows.
Yeah. One local and one... in Ferndale?
I don't know. Somewhere in Metro, dude. I got pretty intoxicated, as did
you. We all did, I believe. Yeah, that was night's end. I think I ended up trying to fight everybody over the sink not working right.
Yeah, and you kept... all right, so this dude's, like, fucking screaming about, like, they're trying to take our women. And the woman they're trying to take, I'm not going to say who it is, but she knows who she is.
Oh, that's right. I
and she's just
story.
Like our homegirl, you know what I mean? But it was pretty funny, dude. We're like, dude.
Oh, I remember now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not taking our women. We only have one, and she's like a broad woman, you know?
I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, that's right.
It was
So what was the next, like, serious band after Ingrain?
I didn't have any other bands between there until As Heroes Die.
Okay.
As Heroes Die, I was not on the recording. It was just guitars. But they had interest in a label, and they got set up for a tour with a band from Windsor called Hard Time. Shout out to Hard Time. Hope
yeah,
you guys
Hard
are
Time's
all alive.
The shit, dude.
Love you guys. Missed you. Had a great time. We booked up a tour with them for Canada, New York, and we wanted to get down to Jersey and then come back. So that would be the next band that I was in. Let's see. They pretty much had a full demo by the time I got into the band. I just laid down bass lines. I wanted to be part of that band. It was all my boys, you know.
I feel that's probably the most successful hardcore band to come out of Alpena.
Yeah.
Or the most well-known.
And talented. By far. We had Kirchhoff on drums at that point, so we were all double bass.
Yeah, dude.
Heavier than fuck. We leaned real hard into metal. And then Bird was on vocals. So backflips.
Right, right.
Brutal fucking vocals. I mean, it was awesome. We were a force to be reckoned with, no doubt.
It's like imagine pre In For The Kill.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I played bass on that band. It was cool. We booked up that tour. We headed out. First show was in Windsor, which was kind of a different night. we didn't play that. It was in somebody's backyard. And I remember me and Bird started moshing because nobody was really dancing. So we were throwing windmills, and it was in somebody's backyard. Mm-hmm. And I slipped and fell into a kiddie pool that was full of, like, green algae and slime and shit.
Oh, damn.
And, like, I recovered. Like, I was on one arm, slid through it, and, like, I come out of it, and I went right back into a, you know, a windmill.
Fucking, floor. Yeah, you can recover when you're young, dude.
And so that was the first night, and then we actually got on the legit tour, and wow, I don't know. There was a lot of different shows, mostly in Canada. So we were all 19-ish, so we could drink in Canada. So things got a little bit spicier, I guess, in that band, different shows. I'd say the highlight of that tour would be London, Ontario. Kind of an interesting night. I don't remember the bands that we played with other than Hard Time, who we were touring with. But that show was off the fucking hook. It was unreal. People were going crazy. It was a great set. We got off. Hard Time went on. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen as far as dancing in a pit or whatever at a hardcore show. Bird, at one point, there was this big brick wall. And Bird goes running at this brick wall.
Whoop.
Climbs up the wall and kick flips off the fucking wall and lands in the middle of the pit straight into a windmill. And the entire place was like, holy fuck, that was the band that just got off stage. That was their singer.
So, right, so you guys are like, this is what the fuck is up.
Pretty much, yep.
Yeah, that's good shit.
And that could harken back to One King Down and all that. I mean, we were just, I don't know, being from a small town, maybe we were a little pent up.
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I always thought we fucking danced hard up here, dude.
Yep.
I mean,
we had the comfort knowing if you hit somebody in the face accidentally, like, it was probably your boy.
Right. And it's, yeah, exactly. So. And I've seen fucking a lot of my boys' teeth and noses, blood, just standing there, dude. I can think of somebody goes back to windmill, nose is just like, oh, shit, sorry, dude. Like, yeah, you knew there were motherfuckers behind you. Why didn't you just take two steps forward? Yeah.
Right. Lean into it.
Yeah, lean into it. Wham. But no, it's all, I always thought that, man, from even when, like, we'd go over to Traverse City.
Yeah.
And that shit was always a good time.
Yeah, Traverse City had a little bit of a scene. Actually, our first show was, it was called a Gear Festival, and it was basically a skateboarding festival of bands. It was indoors. It was at the local fucking, what is that thing called? Fairgrounds.
It was at the Merchants Building.
Yep.
That was the first Gear. Now, I was but a wee tyke then. And yeah, I actually went there. I went there to skate. And I wasn't into fucking punk music, hardcore at that time, man. I was just fucking knee deep into fucking hip hop. And you know, that's just like what I was fucking, you know, into. And I remember you guys were in there, but I didn't. I was so focused on, like, trying to be the best fucking skater I could. I didn't give up, you know?
Yeah, it was a competition for sure. That was the main draw.
It was real cool, man, back then to have that in this town.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Derek Hamilton and his dad.
Yeah, for sure.
Them two, without that show, that Gear Festival, honestly, I don't know if the band really would have blown up and the scene would have blown up like it did. That was like a, that was a safe haven. It was like an incubator for music. It was
my
great.
Old lady and I talk about sometimes, like, because she was there, we could have passed each other and not even known it. Right. Shit, right?
Probably.
Fucking dweeb and, like, kicked me over or something.
Well, it was our first show. I remember I was nervous as fuck. And that show is on video somewhere because we went back to the crib and watched that video.
Oh, I'd fucking love to see that one.
It was weird. It was very strange. So that was kind of going back and forth. That was Ingrain. That was our first show. But back to the tour years later in As Heroes Die, we were supposed to tour with Shutdown, I believe, and we were supposed to pick them up.
You guys played one show with them, didn't you?
We played one show, and we didn't even stick around to watch them because we were broke. It was the end of the tour. It was Toronto. And
I'd love Shutdown. I would have loved to see.
We wanted too bad. Red Sky played that. They had just come out. They were heavier than fuck. We wanted to see them too, but we had $0. And we finally got to Toronto, and we still had to get to Jersey yet, and we were out of money. It was a self-financed
and back home.
And back home.
Yeah.
We had nothing
left. 19 years old?
Yep, we were all 19.
And you probably weren't being paid to play, or were you?
We got a little bit of scratch for each show, but not much. Maybe and $50.
Again,
enough for gas.
No internet. You can't just no sell internet. Your dirty undies online right. in Canada and get a quick buck, you know?
Yeah. Nope. But yeah, I mean, the tour was great. London was great. Like I said, Toronto though was interesting because when we got to there, like I said, we were beat from the road. We were sick of each other and it was probably 95 fucking degrees in Toronto that day. I mean, of all days, right? Yeah. So we get to the venue. We're there at like 9 a.m. The show isn't till, I don't know, 6.
But you didn't have anywhere else to be.
We had nowhere else to go.
No money.
No money. So we couldn't turn the ignition. And so us in Hard Time, we just posted up in some parking lot and got a couple gallons of water, drank water for 8 hours in the sun. And we played that show. We opened up. We got done. We all huddled up and we're like, we have literally just enough money to maybe make it back to the border. Not even get back to, you know, our hometown. So
not even get back to our fucking country.
No. Yeah, we were in a tight spot, so we had to give up on the tour, and we come home with our tails between our legs. We never got to technically play with Shutdown on the last leg of the tour and stuff, but we did make it back. We had to turn our lead guitarist upside down and shake every nickel he had out of his pockets to put gas in the tank, and we got over the border. We got detained for a minute. Bird was a little sleepy, we'll say.
Right on.
They woke him up for a full-on... Who are you and why are you coming into this country and where you been? Needless to say, he wasn't the most cooperative.
Never is.
No, but we made it back.
That's cool. Now, when you guys were, there was label interest in, wasn't Stillborn interested in As Heroes Die at one point?
I had heard some, you know, some conjecture about that. I wasn't really involved in the business aspect of the band, unfortunately. I was always just kind of...
That's what I heard. And, of course, I'm going to be like, dude, that's fucking crazy. You know? Jamie Joss's label, like...
Right. Would have been pretty cool. That was probably out there. Honestly, we were good enough. We were interesting enough, no doubt, to make some waves, but... Again, as soon as we got our footing in that band, things kind of broke up.
Just people, you know, growing up, doing different things, wanting different things.
Yep. As adulthood goes, we went our different ways and kind of solidified into legend, I suppose.
So how do you think all that shit has affected you in life? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Being in the scene and, like you said... You had to do all that shit yourself. Had to book the fucking venues. Had to get the band together. Had to fucking shake fucking Nick upside down to get money and get back over the border. Like, you know what I mean? That had, like, that's fucking, has an effect on you. I mean, and now, like you said, you guys met when you were going back to school. So it's like, you have that fucking dog in you to push through shit. You know what I mean?
It takes, like, a certain level of determination to do that, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I would say those years have been probably more influential on my life than any years subsequent, mainly because, you know, those years were our formative years anyway. I mean, we were already teenagers growing up, forming our own ideas.
Right.
And we were kind of hashing them out on the stage. You know, we weren't just keeping our ideas to ourselves. In high school, we were really outspoken and we had a lot of... different opinions that weren't necessarily popular.
Hey, man. They all trickled down to the next dude.
And so, you know, we did what we did. And I guess when you look back on it, you don't realize it was significant at the time. But when you look back on it, it really is. And I guess it kind of continued in this town for years. I mean, there were hardcore shows and bands that come out of this town for years afterwards when I had moved away and, you know, I wasn't even a part of it. So
yeah, you didn't even live here when I got into the scene.
No.
So, I mean, think about that. And that changed my life for the better. So, And you weren't even, and you had no idea. And I'm only one person, so you, who knows, man?
True.
You know, I'm sure you've unknowingly turned a lot of people on to music and shit, in, at least in this town, or made them want to do bands. I know I can say that for Brian Mattson with his band Witness to an End.
Yep. Probably the biggest follow-up to us, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there was nobody else.
And that's the time that, that's when I started coming around.
Yeah, I miss those years, and I regret that I wasn't around for them. I don't know where I was at that time, but...
Living life.
Yeah, man. But it's just really cool to know that, you know, you started something that you weren't even intending on really being a scene. You're just kind of throwing things together and trying to express your ideas or to be creative in a sense. And, you know, it went on to be a scene. But I think part of that was... the fact that we went downstate and we went to Detroit and we went to all these shows, even shows we didn't play, we were up in that scene, you know. And so we weren't really outsiders necessarily. We were from a small town. We had a hell of a long way to drive to get to anything going on. But the fact that we would go through with it when we were 15, 16, getting rides from our moms down to Detroit to go see these shows, I think it just showed that, you know, it don't matter where you're from. You know, where your mind, your heart's at, you know, you can accomplish anything. And I mean, you guys look at your podcast. I mean, you know, we were just talking about this off air, you know, where you started, where you're at, and now you got a studio. I mean, it's dope. It's all coming together, and it's just persistence, you know. And I think that's part of why that influences me still to this day. And I'm able to, I don't know, maybe keep my head above water during adulting, is maybe those foundations of the hardcore scene and that friendship, you know, kind of forged a foundation of, you know.
Like that never give up attitude.
Yep. You got the will, there's a way.
For sure, man. So what kind of music are you into now? Because I know, you know, when we were in a band together, we were listening to fuck psychobilly shit, rockabilly shit. You know, and we're Bill's all over the place. You're like Ryan and I, you listen to all kinds of shit. So what's tickling your fancy as of late?
Oh, wow. Well, I listen to a lot of different shit, no doubt. I guess I'm not sure how you pronounce your name. Emil and the Sniffers, Emil.
Amel and the Sniffers.
That's how I've always heard it.
Oh, yeah. They popped up. They're kind of cool. But I listen to weird shit. All kinds of shit all over the place. But, you know, I span the horizons. I was just looking at some Waylon Jennings here in the record store, all the way to straight edge hardcore in the 90s to jazz probably 15, 20 years ago. I got into, I love a little bit of everything, but I'd say most recently, you know, I'm loving what's going on in the Detroit hardcore scene, you know, seeing Cold as Life come back up. Earth Mover coming back up, Never Ending Game. I mean, it's just on and on, and that scene is so hard right now. It's unbelievable. Like,
I don't think there's been that many bands to come out of fucking one town in this span. Like, you know, it seems like 2-3 years there's like a dozen or more bands, man. It's and they're all fucking good.
Yeah,
it's insane. Do you think? I mean, obviously it's because of you guys going down back and forth to Detroit, but I always felt that Alpena and Detroit had a really good relationship with each other because of that.
Yeah.
And we recently had Lear on from Some Days Are Darker, and he mentioned, you know, knowing about Alpena guys coming down and hanging out because he was singing in Face Down, like we were talking before. Now, did you guys ever play with them?
Actually we did. The demo we recorded, probably 97-ish, we recorded with Hasty at, Cloud City. So we did that recording over the course of a day. I think it was probably a day.
And that's the one with the Rocky cover?
Yes. Yes. That is the Rocky statue cover demo. Yeah. Probably the most legitimate release we ever really had. But yeah, it was a trip, especially doing vocals, like when you're recording, we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, no doubt.
So when I go to record vocals, and I was sick at the time, I had bronchitis or whatever, and my throat was pretty rough. You don't realize that when you're screaming these vocals out, you're the only one screaming. Like, all the instruments are getting recorded separately. So when it comes time for the vocals,
you're just...
All the neighbors are like, who the fuck is screaming in that house? Like, what is going on? But it's rhythmic, so it's kind of weird. And so everybody, you know, all my friends, everybody hanging out that, you know, was in a band and went down for that recording, they're all laughing because it's like they could all hear me in that house screaming these lyrics out. And then I think we had some gang vocals on there, too. So we all had to pile in a room and blah, blah, blah. But that was our recording. It was cool. And we ended up playing the Vegan Grocer in the basement. I don't remember where it was, but play with Face Down. I want to say maybe One for One. Might have played that too. I don't remember. But I had mutilated my hand pretty bad in a trampoline accident. So it's...
Shit, I'm sorry, man. It's out of nowhere, fucking trampoline accident.
I was 16 or whatever, jumping on a tramp. I didn't realize when you hit the corner of the trampoline, it don't shoot you up. It shoots you out.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah, I got shot out over the tramp, and there was a swing set coming right at me. So I put my hand out, and a big quarter-inch bolt went into my hand and ripped my hand apart. It was pretty brutal. I think I had 42 stitches on that one. That was like 2 weeks before we had to do that recording. So my hands all wrapped up, stitched up. We went to that show and we had bronchitis, which, by the way, if you listen to that demo, it sounds way cooler because I was sick. Because
it's like super raw.
Super raw. And my vocals were heavy. They were heavy vocals.
That's like I said earlier, this shit is like stand up today. Like if that came out today or was recorded today and you put a different name on it.
Right.
It'd be like fit right in. It's crazy.
Yeah. Kind of timeless, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think it was our mindset. I think that mindset is timeless. And you hear that in bands now, even. You can still hear that.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, not anger or struggle, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you can hear the dog in it.
For sure. I got to take a leak.
Oh, yeah.
Super bad. I'm excited.
Okay, so we were talking about you guys' band. That was Wild Will and the Four Plays, correct?
Yep.
So tell us about that, because I've heard a couple stories from Jeremy, but I've never heard your stories.
Okay, well, let's see. I just moved back from Florida. I was going to college and different stuff down there. And then I actually transferred back to my hometown because we have a concrete tech program here. So I come back on... a government bill to do that. It worked out perfectly to come back to my hometown for that and to try to get an actual trade instead of just being a traveling cook and a truck driver my whole life. So shortly after I got back to Alpena, I met up with Cole. I think it was Cole first, and he was playing stand-up bass, and I had just started getting into maybe psychobilly, rockabilly, really heavy. Obviously, Tiger Army, Social D, a lot of stuff kind of started that, and it just kept going down the river of psychobilly. And
yeah, so, Social D definitely was what fucking initially got me into being more curious about like rock and roll, and ending up going down that rabbit hole there with you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely the genesis, I would say, for that whole movement. And, you know, just do something a little bit different. But I also wanted to have a little bit of hardcore to it, kind of be like a Misfits, I don't know, Calibre's hardcore thing. It was kind of a strange ensemble there. But we got with Cole, and then I think we got with Dan Ballore for drums, and then we got with you for rhythm. And we were just like a little four-piece or whatever.
And that was like the first time I played guitar. Because
right.
I just like started
in
playing.
In a show or all together?
All together. Because I played bass before in a couple bands. But like I just fucking They just, I said vicious'd it, man. You know what I mean? They just pulled my plug and I ran around like an asshole.
Yeah, gotcha.
It was perfect. So, exactly what we needed.
So, yeah. So we had it, it's just like bar cord, like power cords, bar cords, some little fucking single note doohickeys, but it's fucking, it was like, it's fun, you know?
Right.
It was fun. We leaned heavily on the stand-up bass, for sure, as like a centerpiece. Just clack away, dude, and we'll kind of thrash around, and something will come together eventually. And it did. I think we come up with 3 or 4 songs. We had a Halloween show here locally. That was kind of a trip. We did a Splice cover of... This is really weird. And this is me, though. I'm kind of like symbolic in a lot of ways. On Halloween, we played a show. And it was also a Saturday night, I think. So we spliced the new Misfits Saturday night with the old Misfits Halloween. And when we made the switch, we grabbed a vocalist from another band, Nick Hartman. I think he's been on the show.
Yeah, 138.
138,
yep.
Yeah.
That was it, yep. I don't know if they played before us or after us that show.
Can I be honest, completely honest with you? I have no recollection of that.
It was chaotic and fucked up.
No, I mean, and I obviously was there, and now that I think about it, I'm like, okay, I remember doing that, like, on a guitar, but... Man, isn't that crazy?
I just remember being like, it was Halloween, and I'm like, it's not fucking Saturday night. It's fucking Halloween.
Yeah,
and then we brought
it.
Nick in, and it was dope, but, like, we sucked. We weren't very tight. But we had fun.
And that was at 10th Avenue, wasn't it?
Yep, it was at the Pump.
Yeah, 10th Avenue. For all those who don't know, the fucking bathroom was the whole place in the winter was heated by a fucking kerosene heater. So if you went into the bathroom and peed in the urinal, the shit steamed, man. Right. You could see outside. It was a fucking busted ass place. But like you could pretty much, you know, you could play whatever. They didn't give a fuck, you know.
Yep.
And it wasn't pay to play. It was just like open mic and shit, you know.
Yeah, they had open mic. Yep.
So that made it easy, as far as like. Practicing in front of people,
right.
Although it can be more nerve-wracking when you know every single fucking person.
typically
they're gonna be more judgmental than a complete stranger.
Exactly. Right.
But we drew people from all over. I remember my buddy from work. He's like, dude, I got guys coming from Roger City and like all these surrounding communities to go to that show, and the show flyer whatever got mixed up, and it basically didn't give a proper time for our set. So everybody that showed up for our set actually showed up for the band after us.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they mixed their times up. So a lot of people that were there for us actually were there for the headliner. And it was kind of a weird situation. But anyway, it was a good show chaotically. We had a good time. And then, of course, that Ferndale show come up after that with the goddamn Gallows. That was a weird show, though. We got booked on that. We wanted to get out of town and kind of...
How did that even come about? I don't even... Did Cole book that?
I think so. Psychobilly Alliance.
Oh, okay.
That dude. I can't remember that dude's name. But he was booking shows for bands similar to us. And somehow Cole hooked up with him, and we got down there for that show. And it was like an Italian restaurant or some sort of restaurant bar. Yeah.
Like half a restaurant with tables and chairs,
yeah.
A wall of booths, and then there was a little, like a wall, a division wall that ran down the whole length of the building.
Right.
With like the, you know, remember they had like big doorways, and then that was where the bar, it was strange. That was where the bar was.
Yeah.
I got so fucked up that. I remember the bartender asking me where I was from, because she was like, are you from Canada? Are you from fucking Ireland? Are you from Georgia? Like, what the fuck? And, you know, and I'm all like, oh, I'm from fucking Albino. What in the fuck is wrong with you? You know, so it's definitely acted like fucking idiots. But I, in my defense... Another guitar player brought his girlfriend, or actually wife, with him, and that's the fucking number one no-no touring in a band that I was in at the time.
Right. No girls allowed.
No girls allowed.
And that, I thought, was the rule. And then we got on the road and, like, somebody brought their girlfriend. I'm like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah. I also remember there was a place a couple doors down that had, like, a sick-ass pinball arcade, like, in their bar. They had a Terminator one, Indiana Jones, some shit like that. I was down there for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, we had fun in that band. I think the logo, we fucking bit the Pabst logo. I think I have a sticker stuck in my record cabinet, but I don't have any left. I think there's one above Fildo, at Fildo's house, too. Above the doorway. Stuck. Or used to be, anyway.
If knowing Fildo, it's probably still there.
He's like an archive of everything Alpinus hardcore and punk.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder if he has any of that video footage stuff.
Maybe. He's got...
Have you asked him about it? You have footage. What he has, right?
Okay. I have all of his footage. Nice. There's a couple of other sources that we need to tap into. But, like, for this... We'll try to splice some shit in.
Yeah, if there's pictures, videos, anything, like fucking, I've never even seen any of this stuff.
I'll send them. I think I have to send it through OneDrive or some shit because they're fucking huge. Or I have to email them a certain way.
Yeah.
That's what I meant, Google Drive.
Yeah, potato, potato.
Yeah.
So it was only just those two shows for Wild Will then?
Yeah, Wild Will and the Four Plays was pretty brief. It was more of like kind of a fun thing at that point. I don't know. I was probably pushing 40.
I have fucking Nikolai was like fucking 2 years old. I mean, yeah. It was just for fun. Like literally just for fun.
Yeah. It was for fun.
Great name for a psychobilly band though.
Had a great fucking name.
And Four was spelled like F-O-R-E.
Yeah, F-O-R-E as in like, yeah. I remember Michael Graves, like we went and seen him in Flint. And we gave him a sticker, and he was like, oh, this is a great name, and Four Plays, this is great. But when I come up with that, it was more of a throwback to the old 50s bands, the old doo-wop bands.
Right.
This guy, Bill Haley and the Comets, or whatever.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's, I wanted a lot of that to go on with this band. I didn't want it to just be an aggressive band. I actually wanted to get some melody in there. But be hard at the same time and just do something completely unique. Because the lineup we had and the cast of characters we had, we were all very different. But
we were basically
from the same cauldron of influences. So, like, I think we threw together a lot of stuff. I think we were close. I remember one time I was like, do a surf riff. Like, we were going to be a surf band at one point, or for at least one song, because Chad could do like a pretty decent surf riff, and I'm like, keep doing that.
Yeah.
And it's like, how many vocals have you ever heard over a surf guitar? Almost none. It's just guitar. So I was like, well, fuck, that shoots down the surf thing, you know? I mean, you think of like the Penetrators and the Aqua Velvets and like all these kind of bands like that, and like there's no vocals, it's all guitar work.
Oh, for sure.
So I wanted to like throw some vocals in on some surf music or anything like that, just do something different.
I'd be the wrong dude for that. I need about 10 more years of fucking practice.
Not everybody's cut out to be Dick Dale, but of course Dick Dale would probably beg to differ. You could always be what's his name, Link Wray.
Yeah, Link Ray is fucking cooler. Crazy Rock Hooter.
Yep, Rock Hooter's dope. Streets of Fire.
Man, we have a bunch of his fucking records here.
Rock Hooter?
Oh, yeah.
He's fucking awesome, dude.
Yep. I wonder if he's still alive. He's probably still kicking, eh? Doing movies.
I don't know.
He, like, did every Walter Hill movie.
If I had to guess, I would think he's already passed away, but...
I think he might be getting up there, yeah. You know what's weird? When I moved to Texas, I was turning this house into a restaurant, basically. And I was living in it at the same time across the street.
77.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Shout out to Rock Hooter. You're still alive.
Yeah, what's
hit
up,
me
Cooter?
Up, Noise Avocation. You know what's up.
Yeah, hit up Noise Avocation. We'll have you on.
Watch us get hit up by his publicist or some shit. Oh, that would be so bizarre.
Yeah, that'd be sick, man. The Purple.
Cease and desist.
The Purple album is my favorite one.
Anyway, you moved to Texas. And what were you saying?
So I was renovating this house into like, it's supposed to be like a cafe or whatever outside of Austin. And across the street, actually, Link Wray had a little cabin. It was a trip. It was right on a creek. And my boss was like, yeah, Link Ray lives there, and he's got like a fucking 55 Fairlane in the garage. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
that's sick.
You just never know where you're going to end up. Neighbors with Link Ray. Fucking cool. Dope.
That is pretty bizarre.
But he never come back to town, so I never seen him, unfortunately.
So it's just like one of those properties that he owns that he stashed his shit there. Yep. And yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. I think he probably got cars out of Austin or just wanted a landing spot when he was in town. And so he bought this little shitty rundown cabin, and like once every 5 years, whatever, he would put a different car in the garage or...
Fuck, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been cool to see him, but no such luck. I did see at the Broken Spoke, what the fuck's Dale Watson. That was cool.
Broken Spoke, cool. I assume, is a little joint down there.
Yeah, a little honky-tonk bar on Lamar in Austin. That was all I really did down there when I was in Texas. Just work, basically. But I did see a couple good shows there.
Yeah, Austin would be a... I would imagine, at least back then, would have been fucking cool. Not so much now. I mean, it seems like that place has been flooded and overran with the people from other states, but...
It's a little different now.
That's what I hear, anyway.
They're keeping Austin weird, no doubt. I wasn't into it when I went there. It was 09, and it was busier than fuck. Yeah. You couldn't get anywhere. It was the fastest growing city in the United States after Grand Rapids. It was weird.
So it's just, yeah, mad amount of people.
It was not fun to live there. But I lived out in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, if you bought milk in the city, by the time you got home, it was spoiled.
You know, holy shit.
I was 45 minutes out of the city, so... I had it pretty peaceful.
That's good.
Just me and the rattlesnakes.
But, I mean, that's... I wish that was how it was for us. I wish Alpena was like a half an hour, 45 minutes from a major city. Make going to these shows a little less strenuous. Oh, yeah,
right, right.
What would be the first major city from Alpena?
Bay City, maybe, population-wise.
I don't know that I'd call that like a major city, though.
Detroit is not the really, major. Yeah. Or Lansing would be the major.
I guess would be
capital.
Saginaw.
Yeah.
Saginaw, Flint, maybe.
Yep.
Somewhere in
Genesee County.
Yeah, Saginaw was weird. Never had a scene. Flint had a little scene.
It definitely had a hip hop scene.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yep. Yeah, which is interesting. You know, Michigan definitely has its all-star cast of musicians that are one of a kind. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at like Bob Seger, Iggy Pop, I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, I'm not even scratching the surface, but I think something about Michigan, something about Detroit, especially, there's a heart of creativity there that's certainly unique. As opposed to anywhere else in the country, you're only going to get music from Detroit, and you know it's from Detroit, you know, for the most part. If
you know,
look,
I think
into
it's
it.
Like the Midwest living in the seasons.
Yeah.
It has its own attitude. And
yeah,
stuff for sure.
Because, you know, we got, like, we go through winter, and fuck, dude, I'm so sick of winter. You know what I mean? Of, like, having to deal with it or whatever, right? Shoveling snow, this and that, right?
Yeah.
It's coming. So, I mean, I think that does. Most of us are, you know, on this side of the state are blue-collar people. Are, you know, I mean, I think all that really comes out of Michigan, making us unique to the world. I mean, fuck, do we got, like, Motown, the fucking Henry Ford.
The car industry in general, like, all that, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The furniture in Grand Rapids, like,
right.
Shit's world famous, you know.
Plus,
yeah.
we allegedly created punk, like, if you...
Yeah,
people think like
Iggy
MC5 and Iggy.
MC5,
like,
yeah. Yeah,
now,
dude.
That's open.
I'm like proud of our Michigan
debate,
shit.
Depending on who you're talking to, I'm sure, but like
I'll
definitely.
Fucking argue it. But yeah, man.
Yeah, I think you know, I think it's just because it's blue collar. To be totally honest, I think that aspect, especially with the big three in Detroit, and Detroit, you know, back in the day was not the most economically vibrant city in the States. It was the most vibrant city in the world.
Yeah, like back in the 50s and shit.
Yeah, dude. Like,
I think that's why it fell so
right.
hard, too, because there was such a long way to go down.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. But I think with that descent, you get some hell albums, some great lyrical content that comes out of that struggle. I mean,
yeah, that's what that's just
think about the amount of like different of events coin. And ups and downs that have been in there. Like you had music in, during the riots and stuff that were coming out. That was, yeah, it's there's a ton of history there. Like I've talked to people, you know, in like California and stuff, and they're like, oh, Michigan, like, why would I ever go there? Like, what's there? Like, well, I mean, there's a shitload of history depending on what you're into, though.
Right, right.
There's fucking water, dude. That's what's here. Yeah, I can live on it. Shit ain't gonna make me go crazy.
Right, right.
No hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
No hurricanes.
Very minimal, minimal tornadoes.
Just don't sail.
Yeah. Just don't sail.
Yeah, you might get cast upon the shore of broken ships.
Good, good.
So outside of shows that you've played or toured with, bands you've toured with, what are just some of the crazy shows or fun shows that you've been to yourself in general?
Well, there's a lot of them.
Just ones that, like, stand out. I don't need a fucking...
Yeah. No, I won't give you the list. Shows that were unique. I know the one that always stands out to me, and it wasn't in Detroit. It was actually in Buffalo. Me and my buddy went out there to visit some friends, and we blew the head gasket on our van on the way out there. It was like 100 degrees in Canada, go figure. And we were doing 100 on the Queen Elizabeth Way, and we blew the head gasket. We got stuck in Ancaster, Canada, and Josh caught a ride back with our buddy Kyle in his El Camino, and he had to drive 5 hours out of Buffalo to get us. I rode back with the fucking tow truck driver and his fucking cousin that was sleeping next to me. It was the middle of the night by the time they got us, and the fucking gear shift was right in between my legs. So this fucking guy all the way to Buffalo, 5 hours, is basically grabbing my crotch to shift the gears of this tow truck. So we were in Buffalo. That's not the show.
Was he towing the van?
He was towing our van.
I'd have been like, yo, I'm going in the fucking van, dude.
You know, honestly, halfway through the trip, I was like, pull over, dude. I'm getting in the van, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Did they let you get in the van?
Huh?
Did they let you get in the van?
No. I stuck with them because they didn't know where they were going, and I didn't know where the fuck we were going either. So they're asking me for directions. We got to Buffalo at like 3 in the morning. So... it was all fucked up. We actually beat Kyle in the Camino there, if that's believable. But anyway, so we're in Buffalo. We're basically stranded. I call my job. I'm like, yo, I got to quit because I don't know when I'm coming home. it was a pizza place. It was whatever. Get another job, you know. But we were there. We had just turned 18. We wanted to get tattooed. So our buddies were already there getting tattooed. And that was part of the reason we wanted to go, plus vacation. So... now we're stuck there with a blown head gasket. Whatever. We got about $100. We can make it for a little while. Maybe we'll have to get a job. So we're there and...
$100 and you're getting tattooed.
Yeah, and that $100 was for the tattoo. So we basically didn't have any money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
eating Boca burgers and...
unless you're getting a Terry tattoo, dude. You're fucking... my God. Yeah. $100.
Yeah,
after living off of it, you have like $10. Maybe you could get Terry tattoo.
Right, right. I think I paid maybe $80 for my first tattoo.
That's what's up.
It wasn't much, but it was good work, and I wanted tribal, and he's like, we're not doing fucking tribal. So I'm like, come on, it's 98. He's like, yeah, tribal's going away.
Was that at Nickel City?
No, or it was, yeah, Tonawanda.
In Buffalo?
It was Dirk. Was it Nickel City? Yeah, wherever Josh apprenticed.
I think that was Nickel City, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that was the name of it, yeah. Tonawanda.
That's sick.
Yeah.
So you got talked out of tribal, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. And I ended up getting some weird shark tribal fucking, I don't even know what it is. It was the first tattoo.
Where is it?
It's on my calf.
On your leg?
Yeah. Fill the legs up first. But yeah, so anyway, in Buffalo, the most interesting show, I would say, the Earth Crisis Fury of Five VOD tour was coming through.
Oh, VOD, dude.
Yeah, and that was right when the fucking self-title was out, and we were all going fucking crazy for that whole situation. It was really cool. It was different. But, of course, Fury of Five had just blown up.
What
we
were they
really
on?
Know them. It had to be the
at
first...
first victory release?
Had to be.
Damn, because
it was 98, so...
At War with the World.
Or 97.
Fucking stick man in his fucking prime, dude.
Yeah. So here's the interesting part. And Earth Crisis headlined it. We roll up to the show, and Stickman's out there, and he's just talking to some scene kids. He's got no shirt on. The dude's 6'7".
Yeah, dude.
He's fucking shredded.
Still is, dude.
Covered in tats. And we all knew who he was. Because right. Obviously.
The fucking dreads.
Right. The dreads gave him away. And he's telling this story, and I didn't stick around to listen to it because we were fucking terrified. We're like, oh my God, who the fuck is that? Oh, that's fucking Stickman. So anyway, that was cool. But the show was insane. It was a huge theater, an old theater, kind of like our state theater. Imagine that theater cleared out with the stage. So there's probably
pretty badass.
I don't know, 500 people there. There's a lot of people there, a lot of kids. So anyway, that was dope. Obviously VOD was great. Fury 5 stole the show. Another Victim, I think, played as
well. Damn,
they were good too.
It's fucking stacked. No, that would have been like a Vic. Was that like a? No, I guess VOD wasn't on Victory.
No, that I don't know. Yeah, and then we seen a Revelation tour with Better Than a Thousand and Ignite. That was dope. That was a
classic
huge lineup.
Fucking bands, dude.
Yeah, we got really lucky. The 2 weeks we were in Buffalo, every fucking awesome band was coming through.
Oh shit!
And then we seen All Out War and Death Threat. That was another really good show. But I would have to say, as far as the shows I've been to as like a small town scene kid that would try to get out of town and stuff, you know, the one that stands out the most, and it's probably just for its theatrics, would be the American Psycho Tour for the New Misfits with Sick of It All and H2O.
Damn. Oh, that would have been a sick lineup, dude.
Yeah, that was Thicker Than Water Tour that was built the last tour.
American Psycho. Now, they closed, I assume?
Let me see. Sick of It All opened, H2O followed, and the Misfits closed it out.
No shit. You know, yeah. It's weird how that works because, like, you know how Toby was a fucking roadie for Sick of It All, and then they're opening for his band.
Right.
Gnarly, dude.
That's a 5-year plan.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, it was dope. We didn't know what we were getting into. We didn't know what was up with the Misfits, especially me. Like, my buddies kind of knew about the Misfits, but like...
You're like Danzig Misfits, right?
Right. But see, where I was Black Flag, Minor Threat, and then all of a sudden Earth Crisis, Bloodlet, all the Victory bands. Like,
okay.
I didn't even get to a point where I got into the Misfits.
You just got to them later on then.
Yep, I got to them way later. And the cool thing about that show, this is a trip. So obviously we were there for H2O and Sick of It All.
Yep.
We were JNCO's baggy pant kids, right? We were walked up to Clutch Cargo's, right? And there's a fucking line of skull-painted black leather jacket, crazy-looking motherfucking devil locks from here as far as you can see. And we're all these shaved-head little kids with our JNCO's. And we're like, what the fuck are we getting into? This ain't no, like, hardcore show that we're ready for, right? So we got up in there, and obviously H2O and Sick of It All were great. And then our friend's ma drove us down there. Well, she showed up to the show early to pick us all up. Well, me and my boy Kyle, we wandered back into the show to see what this Misfits event was all about. The lights dipped, whatever, and we're surrounded by all these face-painted tattooed of Danzig tattoos everywhere. I mean, it's fucking crazy. We weren't ready for this shit. The lights are down. And fucking all of a sudden, we see from backstage a torch, like a flame. And it's the fucking Crimson Ghost. He's dragging a body bag out on the stage. And we're just like, what the fuck? Right? He wanders off stage. You can see, like, the other band slowly creeping in the darkness. And then they break into fucking American Psycho or whatever. And Michael Graves jumps up out of the body bag straight into the song. We were fucking blown away. Like, we weren't ready for that. Like, we'd seen a lot of cool hardcore bands and stuff. A lot of energy.
Nothing like that kind of put into it in the theatrics, yeah. That stage show. Yeah,
the torches. Like, holy fuck, we weren't ready for that. So that left an impression a little bit.
That makes it so much cooler that you didn't know what to go into. Because a lot of the people that were there who had their face painted and shit obviously already were fully fledged into it and already knew what was up. So... Man, that would have been fucking nuts to see that.
Yeah, that probably was one that stands out the most, honestly. That was a big fucking deal because, like you just said, we weren't ready for what we were about to see. So really, it's like a knockout punch. Like,
yeah, I mean, think of, yeah, if I think about the anybody, you're going to Sick of It All on H2O.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
and how good was that, right?
Yeah, and then the Misfits show up. It's kind of, and you've never seen them or heard them. That is right. Pretty random.
Yep. And like at that time, like I would hear bands that had melody or whatever, harmony, and I hated it. I'm like, I want it hard. I want it fucking loud and right. Fucking metal. And so like when I seen the Misfits, and I'm not saying like H2O and Sick of All are like that, but that's different. They're legends. They're hardcore.
No, yeah, I know what you're saying.
It was a little bit different. But then we hear the Misfits, Michael Graves' Misfits of All, with all this melody and harmony. And it was like, man, this might be able to grow on
yeah,
us.
Yeah, and it's fucking sick, dude. I mean, I don't care what any, like, I know there's the argument.
Right.
Or, like, Michael Graves was this or that. But based on the music, man, I like that theatrical yeah. Shit. It's like, in all the songs, just like a lot of the old ones, he's just talking about old fucking movies and, like.
Right.
This shit's cool, man. You know?
And, I mean, his both lyrical eras content
were good. Right, and that's just like, it. It's like two way, completely like, different bands with the same yeah. Name to me.
Yeah,
and I don't care for anything, like, really past that, to be honest.
Like, after Famous Monsters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just kind of right. Like, eh.
They were kind of like
I do like Project 1950.
Yeah, that's not bad. I like the covers. And I've seen them live do that. Set, which was cool.
Yeah, but I don't like consider it. I mean, it's a Misfits album, but it's like more of a like a fun, playful thing. It's not right. Like a.
It's like Jerry.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's always
like Jerry. I've only Marky ever seen and... the Misfits with Jerry. Like, I never got really? To see him like with anybody else.
Okay. Yeah, Project 1950 was Dez and Marky on drums, so that was like punk rock.
Yeah, it's like a super gods. Group.
That was.
Yeah. So that was.
Dez was wow, playing I when I seen them. I seen them in like 2013, 14.
Okay, that's
so
probably
it was
the same
like
tour.
Down late.
Where at?
Harpo's.
Okay, we seen them at the Orbit Room in GR.
It was them, Gutter Ghouls, which was like a horror okay. Punk psychobilly yep, band. Yep. That was the first time that I had seen them, and I met Bill, who's in Illmatic, and
right.
Brandon, and Kevin was the drummer at the time, who's the drummer for that. What's that country band? The Ryan J dude.
Ryan J Country?
Yeah, the one that Bill was in for a minute. I think somebody else played too, but I can't remember who it was. But yeah, it was just Jerry. Like, I never got to see another edition of. I do have a picture, like, standing next to Jerry. Nice. Like, I got to meet him and shit. But yeah, to see the American Psycho tour would have been fucking bizarre. But I was.
Yeah.
Six or something.
Oh, like, okay. Sure. Yeah, it was 96. Seven or eight.
Yeah, so I would have been seven.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and that's cool too. I mean, you know, like I was born in 1980, so unfortunately my head was filled with a lot of shitty music for years. Not to say that Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue are shitty, but when you hear it 24 million times a day all day long,
yeah,
it becomes shitty. So it's like yeah, dude.
Plus,
balls.
If you go watch either band in concert now, you would be well in your rights to say they're right. Shitty.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, catching Oasis right now or something.
Yeah. Man, I seen that. That's fucking nuts. That, like,
that
yeah.
Makes complete sense to me. You know what? Liam's probably like, dude, I'm fucking, let's make some money.
Yeah.
Like, why right. Wouldn't he? It's perfect. Everybody, it's like the 90s
it's
are
the right
back.
Time. Yeah. Because yeah. If Limp Bizkit can do it, Oasis can
exactly.
Do it.
Exactly.
For
right.
Sure. Because, I'm not even into Oasis.
Right,
or
I like
Limp
Oasis.
Bizkit,
I love Oasis. And, I think they're way underrated.
I'm curious as to what they're going to do, but I'm very skeptical as that it's just a fucking money grab. You
and
know what I mean?
Probably
I've seen
is
some
to
shit
degree.
Like going on with Ticketmaster, like a bunch of errors happening, and they were like, they somehow blocked the tickets from being scalped or whatever, mm-hmm. But then after they did that, they increased the prices by like 20% or some shit. And
that's
I was
happened
like,
before, yeah.
You're just doing the same thing you
yeah,
guys are.
Oh, shit.
I think they're under some type of fucking investigation for it, but clearly
right.
It's not that pressing because
yeah,
they're
it's
still
like,
doing
it. If they're
going
to put out,
right.
Are they, you know, I haven't heard they're just going to go out on tour. Or are they going to put out new music?
I think it's just a tour.
Tour yeah.
I haven't read anything about music, but I also haven't like, gone out of my way to look. I've just seen shit on Instagram. Right, about
it. Could be waiting to see how the tour goes.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely just see
it'll sell out of like
right. Oh, fuck yeah. It's a cash in.
It's, you know, I mean, honestly, when Oasis came out, I think I was in hardcore at that point. I think it was 96 they probably come out. So when they came out, we fucking hated them. We hated everything on MTV. We're like, this shit's fucking soft. It's meaningless.
Yep.
But once I turned 30, 40 years old, I'm like, wow, this Oasis band really fucking had something going on that no other band was really doing. I mean, they're almost harkening back, maybe not to the Stones, but like, who do they remind me of? That you could tell that they were aping off that one lick, and it just lasted forever. I can't remember. But anyway, I grew to appreciate them when I got older.
Right,
and the uniqueness of what they had going on. Plus, if you listen to interviews with those guys, they're fucking awesome. I mean, all they do is fucking bitch at the interviewer the whole time.
Oh, no, yeah, I know. I
love it. It's like taking me back almost to kind of like English punk in a
way. Yeah, when they were popping. What year did you? Yeah, they were popping off when I was like junior high.
Yeah, yeah.
So
96.
Yeah, so they were like the same thing. But I mean, I was like closet like them. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right, right. Yeah.
But what you're saying about being closed-minded because of like, you know, you're only listening to metal punk or you're only listening to whatever. I was guilty of it, and I did that with the Beatles, where I was like, man, I don't want to even fucking hear that shit. And then like, you know, as soon as I don't know, 21, 22 years old, man, I was just like, I started spreading out, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. And it's like you said, now there's still a couple of those bands, man, I can't fucking stand. Motley Crue.
Right, right.
You know, shit like Poison.
That's because, like you said, like we kind of, at least I did for sure, grew up in all the greatest hits time era of all those bands.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that was all that was on the radio here. That was all you heard people talk about. That was like,
the classic rock stations around here is like endless.
They're still playing them. Yeah. Like, that was the main thing that you found in music stores and stuff. Like, yeah, Camelot and FYE had a selection of, you know, this, that, and the other. But primarily, like, there was, you know, billboards of fucking Motley Crue albums or like. And it had its time. I can't do that whole hair era.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that honestly.
And we hear it endlessly here, too.
Right, right, right.
Makes hardcore and punk, it, like going to shows back in the day and getting shit that you know you're not going to be able to get fucking anywhere else. And, you know, that's kind of gone now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, true.
Like, I don't know.
It's easier for
it's like it's good.
Anybody.
It's awesome for the band to, like, get out more, you know? But I'm just saying, like, from a collector standpoint, It's like, it's not as unique because, you know, somebody could, with the right amount of money, find it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because, I mean, anything online, you go on Discogs, you can find any fucking release.
Like, you're talking
basically.
About Hard Time? Dude, finding a Hard Time fucking 7-inch? Oh, man.
Yeah. I would love to hear it if you can. Those guys are awesome. I mean, and I honestly, I don't remember a song because we didn't have anything from them when we went on tour.
And that's what I mean is like nowadays with the band camp and everything.
Right.
And how,
it's like a time machine.
Even when we recorded Wild Will in the Four Place and how we did that on a, like a fucking 8-track or 4-track. And we did that kind of fucking ghetto.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even that is like. That was onto a cassette, which was then converted into a fucking CD. And now it's like we have two computers in here and we could create anything.
Yeah, we have like a miniature recording studio in here.
We could
like,
make a beautiful sounding fucking album out of just this shit.
Yeah. Yep.
And it wasn't like, I mean, yeah, there was some money that went into it, but take it like now compared to like 20 years ago.
Right, and I'm thinking like Phil Spector's got a wall of sound and he's, you know, paying an orchestra X amount of dollars for fucking 3 days straight. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
Yeah, because anybody can set up an audio interface and a little vocal isolation booth and just go at it.
Giving her. So, Bill, what are some other hobbies? I know you're pretty much like into the same shit we are. Movies, I know you're like probably the most intelligent movie person I think I know.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I remember when you were coming to my house to watch Lovecraft Country, when we were all watching that weekly for a minute.
That and Raised by Wolves.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And I remember when you were breaking down Raised by Wolves was when I first seen, like, your vast music movie knowledge. I was like, holy shit, like, this guy's, like, on another level.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm not really sure how it come up. I guess just being a child of the 80s, only child.
I think that only child, that had a lot to do with me, too, with the movies.
I think that's probably what it really is. Because, like, you know, like, my dad just passed recently. But, like, when I was growing up, he was working in Detroit. So I really didn't see him a lot. So, like, my father figures, no shit, were Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sly Stallone and Bruce Willis. You know what I mean? Because, like,
John McClane. Yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah. I mean, it was better father figure to have, right?
Yeah.
You know, shout out to my pops. Love you, miss you. But Bruce Willis was really cool. So it's tough to compete with that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that probably took hold. But, yeah, throughout the years, I definitely know my movies. When I moved to GR, there was this little boutique movie rental store like a block from my house, and I had $0, but you could get like 5 movies for like $3 at that place.
Sick.
And they were old, obscure, weird shit. So then it come from like a broad spectrum of movies to like the weird shit, the David Lynch and all this different shit. So I guess it kind of expanded from there and whatnot,
but it was pretty much you were put in a situation to where you only had access.
Yeah.
I could only afford, like, this particular kind of movie, so it kind of shaped your fucking shit now, right? I mean,
it really did, yeah.
Circumstances make you, it's fucking crazy. I have a question, though. We were hanging out last weekend, and you were showing me some of your fucking Blu-rays. Did you ever find Lolita?
Lolita, which version?
The Blu-ray version.
The Kubrick version?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find it?
Oh, yeah. But I actually took it. So here's another weird part. And to your point about the movie thing.
You put it in where it's produced by somebody else?
Yes.
Because that's not independent? Yeah, yeah, I follow you.
That is, I'm a little bit weird like that, I guess, just because I know what it is and it doesn't necessarily belong in the lineup.
Right,
just like the producers and Mel Brooks. Like, every one of his movies, I think, was Warner Brothers or something like that. Well, the producers wasn't. It was a different company. And so when you buy a Mel Brooks set, you're not going to get the producers, right?
Right.
You're
going to
get
every
other movie because he was under one studio. Anyway, that's a bit of a side note. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the genesis of it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's always been a medium that's fairly interesting to me. And I had delusions of being a director one day. Probably not going to happen, but I do got a script that I'm banging around a little bit more. Fortunately, Stephen King wrote a book called The Cell, which is basically what my script was about. And there was also a movie called The Signal, which fucked it up too, so I'll have to throw that one out.
I will say this, man. I was telling Ryan about this too the other day. So when you were living at your mom's, and it would have been when you moved back here for a little bit. We weren't in the band yet.
Oh, okay.
It was like when you moved back the first time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We watched Saving Private Ryan in your mom's basement, and you had the fucking surround sound hooked up. And I was like, I was at fucking Normandy. And that was the first time I was like in a, you know, somebody's like home, like theater, but just done in like their mom's basement.
Yeah.
But it was fucking sick. Like, I was just like, how was this down here, you know?
So, yeah, I can make a foxhole
was pretty cool
into like a penthouse suite if I got the right gear.
yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, I would move away a lot. So when I'd come home, I'd always land at my ma's, and she would take me in and throw me in the basement until I got on my feet, which it's been a lot of years doing that. Shout out, Ma. But yeah, I guess moves are kind of always a thing for me. Now my gear is about as good as it can get. The movie collection's ramping up pretty good. I'm now into boutique Blu-rays and trying to get different releases like that, some more obscure stuff. But
I don't
have the time for
that fucking pop shit.
No, I remember when the Titanic came out. That was like the dividing line for me when I kind of started not watching mainstream Hollywood anymore. I was like, James Cameron went from T2 to this shit.
Yeah, right.
No offense to everybody in the fucking world that loves Titanic, you know, but I'm more of an Elvis guy. I'm not a Beatles guy.
My son does a really good impression of Leonardo DiCaprio from Titanic.
Really?
Yeah.
I just watched
the death scene. He yells like this.
I've never seen that movie to this day.
So fucking funny.
You've never seen Titanic?
Nope. Damn.
I just watched Wolf of Wall Street like before we got here.
Nice.
Because I was like, I haven't watched this in a few hours. I woke up early, or a few years, not hours. Sorry.
It'll feel like
movies,
a few hours.
Movies
when done.
A few hours. But yeah, it'd been a few years since I'd watched it, so I just threw it on this morning.
I love the scene when he grabs the mic. And he's, like, literally doing, like, hardcore vocals, like, straight up.
Yeah, yeah, just
he's, like,
screaming.
Doing a motivational speech. Yeah. And he's just out there giving it. I'm like, oh, fuck, Leo's been to a fucking show or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was a good flick. I just watched Furiosa not long ago. That wasn't bad.
That got put on HBO.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yep, it just got put up. Fall Guy just got put up. I kind of want to see that. But honestly, like, movies now, I'm just not into them. It's so rare. I mean, I'm saying, like, I don't even remember. 2008, No Country for Old Men. And then that was the Coen brothers. And then Paul Thomas Anderson had There Will Be Blood, same year.
Amazing.
Amazing fucking movie. And then James Mangold had 310 to Yuma, which was good, but... And they're all Westerns. They're all modern Westerns. And that was the last good year, honestly. After 08, movies kind of went to shit.
I don't know if it's movies or the industry, but it's like, it's kind of like the remake argument,
yeah.
The reboot argument. I just want an original fucking story,
right.
Man.
Yeah,
and
man,
I think
most
it's hard
shit
to find
that.
That's
being done now is just recycled
right.
from another movie.
It's hard
movie.
To find that in, you know... mainstream Hollywood.
For
same
sure.
Same thing with music, you know? You want to listen to fucking Taylor Swift and everything else that sounds
they
the
know,
same,
like,
you know?
Things you're familiar with will sell regardless, rather than taking a chance on something new, nobody knowing what the fuck it is. So I think maybe that has something
just
to do
like,
with it. And
like
just
Disney gutting everything?
The industry is just different, I guess.
Well, I think it's a profound lack of creativity in writing.
Yeah.
It's straight up like
it's just gone.
People are getting
and I wonder if that's
and less imaginative.
Yeah.
Or they're not allowed to because they're tied to a contract with whoever, so
could
their
be.
Freedoms
right.
are like cut off at somewhere.
But I'm saying
yeah.
that this shit's
or it
happening
could be,
at birth.
Could be a collection of everything,
you know,
like
it's
coming
like the
together.
World and
yeah. It's the whole cauldron of political correctness. And
yep.
honestly, if you look at it,
if you're scared to say something because you
yep.
might get fucking canceled.
Exactly.
Now, we don't care because we're fucking
right.
old, but like.
I don't think we're even big enough to cancel.
Kids. No, but I'm just saying on a personal note,
oh,
man. You know what
I
I'm saying?
You.
Like, there's people that they just don't, they don't have, like we were saying about driving shit. They just don't, whatever. They just rather look at their fucking and scroll or whatever dumb shit
right.
they do. They don't have like that. That thirst to learn or to talk about ideas and fucking
yeah I think society has just gotten too soft. It's everything's too convenient now. Even the cities, you know, like the cities aren't the cities anymore. You know, I mean they are, but they're falling apart in a completely different way than
yeah
they
yeah in
to.
A different way. I know it's weird.
I don't know if it's geopolitical shiftings or what, you know. Maybe we're entering the age of Aquarius or whatever it is. Irregardless, as far as music is doing great, and this is the right podcast to talk about music. Movies, unfortunately, are doing shit. But it's a visual medium. So in a way, you're kind of beholden to the politics at the time or the money at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, most definitely.
And whereas music's not like that. I mean, music is a sound, not a voice or a face or a visual aspect necessarily. That's like an addition to what the core of it is. So I think music is going to last forever because it's the original art form. I mean, what else was there besides music to begin with?
Talking.
Drawing.
That's exactly,
maybe,
no,
you
I
know.
Mean, it's grunting and fucking,
right.
chanting, all that shit, man.
So it's always
vibrations, yeah, for sure.
You know, Whereas movies won't be, because, you know, maybe theater come in and whatever age in the past and theater became a thing, but there's too much to that. Whereas music, you can literally just open your mouth and you have music. So it's like God, you know, given at birth in a way, whereas a visual medium, you got to work for that shit. It's not natural, you know?
So speaking of music, that's a good way to get into our usual last of the episode question.
Oh, yes.
So outside of the typical genre of hardcore and metal and that sort of thing, what's something that you listen to that people wouldn't expect?
All right. Well, I was wandering through the record store looking at some different records, knowing this question was going to come up. And I got a whole lot of different artists I could probably throw out there, but the one that seemed to be the most interesting was Rod Stewart.
Fucking hate Rod Stewart.
Fucking Rod Stewart.
Yeah, I don't like Rod Stewart either.
I know, and nobody does. That's why.
Well, the argument of a lot of people that I know that don't like Rod Stewart love the Faces.
Okay.
But to me, they're like, it's the same style shit, really. Like.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you why it's Rod Stewart.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, what is it about Rod Stewart?
It's not him. Just like some other figures in the scene, that it's not them personally, it's one song that opened up doors to an entire different life path, I guess, for me. And those doors were opening to this one song of Rod Stewart, and it's the song he had on the Grand Theft Auto video game, Young Turks.
It's
something about that song. I mean, I played a lot of Grand Theft Auto, right?
So it took all that weight for GTA to come out before you were like, damn, man, it's Rod Stewart shit.
Oh, I fucking hated Rod Stewart. I mean, I thought his shit was the lamest shit ever. If you ever seen a live show of Rod Stewart,
I just didn't like him because of that. When that Forever Young video, when I was a kid, I was like, I don't like what he's doing to that little boy in the box of that truck.
Yeah, the back of the black and white video, yeah.
I'm like, fuck him.
That was just a weird video. Like that,
which is not really fair now, but whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Too late. I don't have enough room in my life for Rod Stewart.
That is weird. I want to say that was like his daughter or something. That wasn't even a boy.
Forever. It was fucking weird either way.
It is a weird video. And that's probably the only video I actually know of his. I think it was the only video that came out on MTV like in my lifetime.
The If You Want My Body, that song is video. Was I think it's video? Top of the Pops or something, but that is very disturbing as well.
But have you seen fucking David Bowie and Mick Jagger's video for fucking
Dancing in the Street?
Yeah.
Very, very strange.
Well, all kings and legends have their moments of baring their ass to the entire world. And Rod Stewart, as we were talking about earlier, certainly has that going for
most
him.
Definitely.
But anyway, the song Young Turks, it basically lyrically, it was about a boy named Billy moving to the city, and that was basically what got me down to Miami. And
that's what's up.
During that whole time, I was working on South Beach. I was hustling street flyers for a printing company, and between that and Billy Ocean, that was on repeat
love me
the
some
whole
Billy
time.
Ocean.
It was South Florida. It was irreverent, and it's super embarrassing. So that's why I brought it up.
Fucking A, dude.
So you can't do any worse than that. So anybody from here on out, don't feel bad.
I can't think of. We've had a few that were like, "Oh shit, really?"
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm too hungry to think of them off the top of my head, though. But
there is a lot of them. I probably could have had a way better one if I had thought about it more, but it just felt like, we're just going to go with ye old Rod Stewart.
Yeah, that's a good one. Because you are definitely the first Rod Stewart. Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
And the only.
We'll see.
I would not expect you to say that either. Because I'm just trying to imagine you in your old Riviera. Like,
if you would like, you can take a complimentary free Rod Stewart record on your way out the door.
Only if it's got Young Turks on it. That should be the intro song for this interview.
Sure, we have.
Do you know if that's, is that a Rod Stewart song?
I think it's an original, yeah. Whatever was on that GTA soundtrack.
We'll have to.
We'd have to see what a record it is, but I have literal boxes of Rod Stewart.
Oh my god!
So there's a good chance I have it, unless it came out in like 2006 or something, and it's only a CD.
I don't know.
But we'll have to see.
But it's just, it's that kind of like irreverent music that you put on and you don't know why it makes you smile. And it could be because you're embarrassed for the performer singing this shit. Or if you actually somewhere in your psyche, deep down, kind of like it. Or maybe both.
Fuck it.
I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's like, that's what's cool about music, though. Like, not everybody's going to like the same shit or be into the same shit. Obviously, you can debate that, but at the end of the day, like, whatever your flavor is, that's your flavor. Like, different shit resonates with different people.
Yeah, yeah. And I think mostly, like, music like that, that's kind of irreverent. It's more the hook or a time in my life.
Oh, definitely. Or the melody.
Yep. Or for whatever reason, that sticks. Almost like a tattoo in a way. Like a tattoo you're not proud of, but it is tattooed on you.
Dude, that's kind of how I am with the Gin Blossoms.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, jealousy.
Exactly. Found out about you.
Yeah.
Fucking whore.
There you go, dude. That's what I'm saying.
Goddamn slut broke my heart.
It's been, been fun. This was a lot of learning for me because I wasn't around for any of this stuff, so...
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed hearing
about it. Yeah, love the Alpina history lesson, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, I've been an avid listener, watcher now of the podcast, and I'm glad to break in your new studio, man. You guys are coming up. And
you're the first interview on the executive table.
Yeah, fucking A, man.
Yep.
I love you, Bill. Thanks for coming on here, man.
Way nicer.
You're my boy, always, since day one, man.
Word up. Same, yeah, man, same.
We appreciate it. And yeah, be fucking talking to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Peace.